And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X-1.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Seven minutes after 11 p.m. on a Sunday night here, January 10th, 2016. Show 42, Lisa Wolf.
Yeah, that's amazing,
that's
right?
A lot
we
of shows.
We started just a few weeks ago, I think, right?
I know, it seems like it. And Lisa Wolf is my co-host here. We have Dan Long, the best in the business. He's our producer in the booth. And my good pal, Kit Clem, is here. He's taking over Mike Costello's job tonight as the executive producer of the show. So he gets to boss everybody around.
Well, Mike doesn't do that, so I don't know if Kit should be able to do that.
We have classic radio shows till 2 o'clock in the morning here. So happy you can join us. And we are on the air here on Radio 720 WGN every Saturday and Sunday night. We've been doing this show for about 40 weeks. We were only on Sundays, but now we're on Saturdays and Sundays. I guess we did okay. And
we
they
did.
Said, hey,
and
let's double
and
your time.
And here's the great thing. We play different shows on Saturdays and Sundays. We have three shows Saturday, three different shows on Sunday.
That's
completely
right.
Different show.
Yeah. And tonight, all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, we have three radio shows for you. We will start things off with The Saint from 1950, Good Detective, starring Vincent Price. Then it's Suspense, where Vincent Price is again heard, along with Claude Rains, in the hands of Mr. Ottermole. And then Raymond Burr stars in Fort Laramie, Good Western Adventure. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming sci-fi thriller The Fifth Wave, about a desperate teen trying to save her brother as deadly attacks decimate most of the Earth.
All right, if you want to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza, you must identify the celebrity Lisa's talking about. Now, here's a hint. He co-starred with Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Stanley Tucci, and Rachel McAdams in the 2015 drama Spotlight.
I'd like to challenge the protective order in the Kagan case.
You want to sue the Catholic Church?
We're just filing a motion, but yes.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is, give us a call right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Identify that celebrity, win a gift card for Lou Malnati's. We'll find our winner after this short break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I'd like to challenge the protective order in the Kagan case.
You want to sue the Catholic Church?
We're just filing a motion, but yes.
And we have Leah on the line from Glencoe. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. We're glad you're listening, and we hope that you know the answer to our question. Who is that celebrity?
I think I do know, and his name is Liev Schreiber.
That is exactly right.
She even said it exactly.
She did.
Right.
It's yep. Liev. Exactly.
Way to go, Leah.
Carl needed a little help with that one.
He's one of my favorite actors. I think he's very talented.
Terrific.
I agree with you. Carl was giving me a little trouble with this one, but I think he's terrific. We were concerned that it might be difficult, but you got it. So you have won a $25 gift card to Chicago's best deep dish pizza, Lou Malnati's. You can visit one of their 40 Chicagoland locations or check them out at loumalnati's.com. I hope you have a great pizza on us, okay?
Thank you so very much.
And
I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, Leah.
Thanks, Leah. Appreciate it. All right. This is the WGN Radio Theater, Saturday and Sunday nights here, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning. Make sure you mark your calendar. Welcome aboard if you're just joining us. We do welcome you. Thank you for listening to our show. Lisa Wolf, my co-host, who is really my boss, picks out all of these shows here. Lisa, how am I doing? Am I doing okay?
You're doing great. We've got some great shows tonight. I know a lot of people are asking for some others in particular, and we're going to play those too. But tonight,
Tonight we
are going to go get going with the Saint.
We have the Saint to start it off, Suspense, and then Fort Laramie. I know a lot of people this week have said, hey, where's the comedies? Because yesterday we didn't have any comedies and no comedies tonight. So we've got it. We heard you loud and clear. We'll make sure and get some comedies on the air for you very, very soon. But right now, we'll start things off. Vincent Price, one of the greatest actors of all time, he appeared on radio as the detective the Saint, who, you know, was created by Leslie Charteris. In the movies, George Sanders played the Saint. Do you remember those movies, Lisa, the George Sanders Saint movies? Sanders' brother, Tom Conway, was radio's first Saint, and then a year later, Vincent Price took over the role. The Saint was Simon Templar, and he was billed as the Robin Hood of modern crime. The show came to radio in 1947, lasted until 51, and do you remember who played the Saint on television? Do you remember, Lisa? He played James Bond later in his life. Roger Moore.
I know who Roger Moore is, but I wouldn't have known without Roger.
Roger Moore played him on television. It's kind of interesting because Simon Templar, created by Leslie Charteris, was supposed to be English. He was an English detective.
Right, I know Vincent Price is not.
No, and he played him on radio, but you know what? He does a great job, as you'll hear here. This is an episode from 1950, November 19th to be exact. It's called No Hiding Place. Let's tune in part one now of The Saint.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
In here.
Oh, thank you.
Come in, Mr. Templar.
Oh, Warden, how are you?
Well, just as gloomy as ever. Sit down. I haven't seen you for a long time.
I do my best to keep out of jail.
And you do your best to get a lot of people in. What can I do for you?
Well, I wanted permission to see one of your prisoners.
Oh?
Yes, Tommy Patchick.
Can't be done, even for you. Patchick's in the prison hospital. No visitors allowed there.
Oh, I see.
You know Tommy?
He did some work for me years ago, Warden, that's all. I didn't even know he was here in prison until I got his letter.
Letter? Well, I wonder how he got a letter out of here.
I don't know. He couldn't very well have put it in the mailbox at the corner.
Mind if I take a look at it?
Oh, of course not. Here it is.
Dear Mr. Templar, maybe I got no right to ask your help, but I need it bad. They're trying to kill me, but I don't know why. Tommy Patchick.
You know, I've got a hunch Tommy's telling the truth. Am I right, Warden?
Yes, you are. Patchick's been here 3 years. He's due out next spring. In 3 years, there have been 5 attempts on his life by other prisoners. The latest was just a day or so ago.
Was he hurt seriously?
Knifed, but not seriously. We don't know who did it, and Patchick's too scared to tell.
Warden, haven't you any way of protecting this man?
Protect him? Look, Templar, this prison was built for 1,200 men. I've got 4,000. The guards are overworked and underpaid. The food's bad. There's no recreation facility. And every year, society sends me 1,000 more men and says, keep them in your crowded cage for a few years and send them back good citizens. Protect Patchick? Why, I can't even...
Hey, what's that?
There's been a break. Hello? Evans, where is it? How many? I see. Be right over.
What is it, Warden?
Your friend Patchick, Templar. He couldn't wait for you. He's gone.
Read all about the prison break. Patchick's still at large. Read all about it. Extra.
Taxi. Hey, taxi. Oh, good afternoon, Louis.
Afternoon, Mr. Templar. Ain't it a heavenly day?
Yes, Louis, it is.
Where to, Mr. Templar?
312 Main Street, Louis.
Gotcha. Did you read about that prison break last night, Mr. Templar? Say this Patchick rode out in the laundry truck. You think they'll catch him?
Oh, sooner or later, Louis. They always do.
You know something? I kind of hope they don't. In my subconscious, that is. Why is that, Mr. Templer?
The universal guilt feeling, Louis. Whenever there's a man in hiding, that man might be you or me.
Yeah, Freud, huh?
Louis, it's Freud.
That's what I said, Siegfried Freud. You know something more, Mr. Templer? I kind of felt this way when that leopard escaped last spring, remember? Then he come back to his cage all by himself. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, an allegory, Louis.
No, it was a leopard. You think Patrick will come back to the cage, Mr. Templer?
Well, I'm afraid that for him there is no hiding place. Hey, isn't this Main Street, Louis?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. 312. Anybody we know?
I got a tip that Tommy Patrick used to live here. Perhaps if I can help him, then you and I won't feel so guilty. Wait for me, Louis, huh?
Sure.
I'll be darned.
What's the matter?
I've been to this house before.
You got friends in the strangest places.
Yeah. As I remember, the landlady was one of the most charming, cultivated damsels I ever had the pleasure of meeting.
Yeah, some guy's got all the luck. You sure you don't want me to come with you?
No, thanks, Louis. I want her all to myself.
Yeah, what do you want?
Dear heart and gentle person, don't you remember me?
I got a very poor memory.
Well, I'm a friend of Tommy Patchek's.
Oh, you are. Know who I am? Shirley Temple. You're a cop, that's what. Cops have been thicker than flies around here last night and today both thicker than flies.
Well, for here, that's pretty thick.
I run a respectable rooming house, and every time a cop comes to the front door, five more rumors go out the back.
Oh, rumors are flying.
Worse for business than bubonic plague. I hate cops. What do you want, cop?
I'm not a policeman, really. I'm trying to help Tommy if I can. If you know anything...
I got a very poor memory.
Well, now, here, would a treasury note refresh it any?
I got a memory like an elephant. Come on in.
Thank you. Now, about Tommy Patrick.
Well, say, you sure you're not a cop?
Quite sure.
Well, I ain't looking for Tommy to come here, but he's got a sister, Nancy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the cops don't either. They were raised separate, and Tommy didn't want her brought into his trouble.
Any idea where I could find her?
I got a very poor memory.
Here we are.
Thanks. She works at the Voodoo Room, cigarette girl.
Voodoo Room? That's Charlie Farrelly's place, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Say, you positive you're not a cop?
Madam, I might as well confess I am a personal emissary of J. Edgar Hoover.
You are, huh? Well, that's good enough for me. Finest president we ever had.
Thank you and goodbye, Barbara Fritchie. Bartender?
Who do you think you're talking to?
Well, you're standing behind the bar. I presumed you were the bartender.
Well, I'm not. Joe is. I'm a big shot around here.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'll wait for Joe, the small shot.
Well, he'll have a long wait. He went out to get a drink, which means he won't be back for several drinks. What'll it be?
Scotch over ice, please.
Coming up. Yeah?
Thank you. Yeah. Nancy around?
Nancy around. Who wants to know? A guy wears a necktie, drinks scotch in the afternoon, thinks all the girls should fall down dying dead when he waves his little finger.
Look, all I asked was, is Nancy...
Big man drinks scotch in the afternoon, thinks he's got a right to... Real big operator here drinks scotch in the afternoon.
I said go away,
thinks...
please. You talk too much and you don't say anything. Just go polish your glasses.
Okay. Real big pinstripe, white shirt, necktie type operator.
Well... You want to see me? What about?
I was down at the state prison last night. I had a letter from a man who wanted to see me, but he couldn't wait.
Tommy.
Yes. I'm Simon Templer.
What do you want?
I want to help if I can.
You're the saint, aren't you?
Yes.
I remember Tommy talked about you. Could you come to my place later? I live at the Sheldon. It's the back apartment on the second floor.
What time?
Around 11. I'll take off early tonight.
I'll be there, Nancy. Do you think there's any chance Tommy might come?
I don't...
Excuse me, but I got a message to deliver, Mac.
Well, what is it, Jack?
Mr. Farrelly just said that he wants to see you in his office.
Keep out of this, Frank. Farrelly doesn't even know he's here.
I said that Mr. Farrelly wants to see Mr. Man of Distinction here, and if I have to persuade him, then I'll persuade him.
Now, stop flexing your muscles, Frank. You need your strength for the cocktail hour.
I said that Mr. Farrelly wants to see you.
What an unattractive gun. It matches your face.
Hey, listen, Max.
Please, Mr. Templer.
Lead on, Jack.
Now, you lead. I'll be right behind you just to make sure that you get there. You stay here, Nancy. Some big deal, this guy. Scotch in the afternoon. Thinks right away all the girls should fall down dying dead when he... It's a
guy to see you, Mr. Farrelly. He was bashful, so I brought him.
Oh, come in. Come in, Mr.
Simon Templer.
Yeah. Welcome to the Voodoo Room, Mr. Templer. Let us see more of you. Cigar?
Thank you.
It's our own brand. And a vial of perfume for the lady of your choice. Voodoo from the Voodoo Room. That's a little trick I picked up from Sherman Billingsley.
Thank you. And where did you pick up this little trick, Mr. Farrelly?
Frank?
Yeah.
Well, he's rather class conscious, but a hard worker.
He was asking about Tommy Patchek, Mr. Farrelly. I heard him.
Indeed. Well, you're a friend of Tommy's, Mr. Templer?
Possibly.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. And you might possibly be in touch with him soon?
I couldn't say.
You couldn't say. But you could tell us the basis of your interest in Tommy.
I could, but I see no reason to.
You see no reason to. Mr. Templer, showing interest in other people's affairs is not always healthy, and some people know this instinctively, and others have to be taught. Teach him, Frank.
Yeah, sure. Not such a big operator now.
That's enough, Frank. That's enough. Throw him out the back way.
Well, okay, Mr. Farrelly. Hey, Mr. Farrelly, I think I broke the bottle of perfume you gave. I heard something crack.
Well, let's look on the bright side, Frank. Might have been a rib.
Yeah, it saves them right, drinking scotch in the afternoon with a necktie.
All right, let's take a break from The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price, an episode called No Hiding Place, November 19th, 1950. You know what, Lisa? I was looking at this cast list, and in the cast, you heard Sheldon Leonard there. And, you know, Sheldon Leonard, that guy. And, of course, he produced the Andy Griffith Show and Make Room for Daddy and all these shows later after being an actor. Peggy Weber is in the cast. Peter Leeds. Lawrence Dobkin, Richard Crenna. There's four people in this cast that I've interviewed on the air, and we've taped the interviews. And we need to start airing some of those here on the WGN Radio Theater, you know, like my interviews with Sheldon Leonard and Peter Leeds, Richard Crenna, Peggy Weber, because I think it's a lot of fun because you get to – we'll play a show, and then you'll get to hear them talk about being in that show and stuff like that. So we'll schedule some of those.
And we should ask if they're interested in that. We can ask our listeners.
Would you like to hear some of my interviews with some of these stars from the Golden Age? As I was licensing shows over the last 30 years, when I would license them from the estates or some of the actors and things, I would interview the actors, and they tell me all about the days of working behind the microphones and with the producers. It's a lot of fun.
So we'll see. Don't be shy. Let us know if you'd like it. Let us know if you wouldn't.
You know? Post to our Facebook. Go to Facebook and just search WGN Radio Theater. That's where you can let us know what you want to hear. If there's a certain show, like some of our listeners have been saying, hey, you've been skimping on the comedies.
Right. Where are the Bickersons already?
Yeah. So we'll get that going for you. We promise. Just go to Facebook and check it out, and we will be happy to play what you want to hear. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Lisa taught me how to say that. Of course, Lisa, you've taught me pretty much everything I know.
I feel that way sometimes, yes, Carl. I can't argue with you.
You were a teacher, weren't you? Something like that? An English teacher or something?
I am a teacher. Once a teacher, always a teacher. How many hats
do you wear on that?
I have a large head.
You have a very large head.
It's
very
many,
bulbous.
Many hats.
It's very Quasimodo-ish.
Yeah, it's very.
But it looks fetching on you, though.
Fetching?
Fetching.
That's
very fetching.
That's a very antiquated word.
You know what? I'm antiquated.
I know. You're old-fashioned guy.
I'm an old guy.
That's what I said. You're an old guy.
So I also use super. I say, that's super. You
super know? Duper.
Yeah. Remember that? Super?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember.
So what were we
that.
Talking about? Oh, yeah.
We were talking about Facebook.
You have two master's degrees. One's in teaching, right? Education?
It is.
And what's the other one is in advertising.
It is.
Wow. See, I remembered.
Yeah, that's
not
good.
Bad.
I've only known you for about, 12 years?
Well, you know, I think it's impressive when someone has two master's degrees.
Well, thank you, Carl. I'm very smart. Impressive.
I surround myself with smart people. See, this is what I do.
Well, you have a lot of intelligence in some areas.
Old-time radio.
That I don't have. So we complement each other.
But you know what? When you're passionate about something,
yes,
which I am about classic radio.
Yes, indeed.
To me, old-time radio, classic radio is a huge passion of mine, has been since I was 12 years old. And when you love something and you want to learn and you're just so into it.
Yeah,
I've been trying to learn all about these shows and listen to as many shows as I can. I listen to them all the time. Kit came over to my house today. He walked in, and I was listening to an old-time radio show. That's what I do.
From last night?
Yeah, I was listening to... No, right. I was listening to an old-time radio. I'm always listening to old-time radio shows. I love them.
Well, that's what I mean. At least you have a passion and you can, you know, explore that.
You know, and that's
And you
true.
Have a forum to do that right here.
That's
so
right.
That's really, really neat.
Real quick, talk about the Cat's Pride contest.
Yes.
Well, it's really a drawing.
It is. It's a drawing and it's a contest. So every month here, we've got Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in and draws one lucky winner to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, the best on the market. If you would like to be in that drawing, send a picture of you with your cat's name and your name and city and state. Send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. That's catspridephoto@gmail.com. We'll have one lucky winner. And we will post all those. Well, Michael posts those pictures on Facebook when he gets back from his vacation, and the end of the month we'll have a winner.
One of our listeners,
yes, there we go.
One of our listeners created some kind of a graphic, right?
And yes, please go to our Facebook and check out the photo that one of our listeners posted about Carl and me sitting around the radio and kind of a little dig to
it
Carl.
It was a dig to me,
which I really appreciated actually, because you know Carl tends to
repeat. I like
repeat.
When people dig me.
I know we dig you, Carl. I always say something and then Carl repeats it, and then I say, didn't I just say that? You're like, yeah, but I just wanted to say it again. So she kind of made a little joke. About
you,
that.
But you notice I didn't repeat anything you said. See, I learned. I learned my lesson.
Exactly. Well, I think I said it pretty clearly.
Yeah.
You need not repeat me.
What did you say?
You just want to be me.
I know. Yeah. That's exactly right,
That's
Lisa.
It. You're just trying so hard.
I know. All right. Let's get back to this episode of The Saint. I am enjoying this. Vincent Price as Simon Templar. It's called No Hiding Place, November 19th, 1950. The conclusion now to The Saint.
Louis.
Hey, Mr. Templar. Yeah. What happened? Here, wait, I'll help you into the cab.
Thank you, Louis.
Oh, gee, what happened, Mr. Templar? You look horrible. You sure smell pretty, but...
It's a doubtful consolation. I tangled with the Mr. Charlie Farrelly.
Yeah, huh? How does he look, huh?
Not a scratch.
Oh, that Farrelly is bad medicine. Stay away from him, Mr. Templar. The less you know about his business, the better.
Maybe. But after you take me home for repairs, you can... Take me to the morgue.
The morgue? I hope and trust a round trip?
The newspaper morgue.
Oh.
I'm going to do some checking on Farrelly. I begin to detect quite an odor about this whole business.
Yeah. So do I. I hardly trust myself in the same cab with you. You get it, Mr. Templar? You said so. You detect an odor. So I said
Louis,
I...
Louis, home.
Yes, sir.
Sam?
Well, Simon Templar, the Robin Hood of modern crime. How are things in Sherwood Forest?
Everybody's getting ready for television.
Come on in.
All right.
Sit down and let's chew the fat. You know anything bad about anybody?
Yes, that's why I'm here. Wonder if I could look at your files on Charlie Farrelly, Sam.
Huh? Oh, no need to get dusty. I'll tell you all you want to know. Farrelly came to this country around 25 years ago, probably from Sicily. Nobody knows for sure. Made big dough in Prohibition days, liquor. Bought a nightclub. Might be leveling now and might not. Big connections, underworld and otherwise. Police never pinned anything on him, and if you ask me, they never will. He's a class operator.
Well, thanks, Sam. How's your memory on Tommy Patchak?
Oh, had to pull the file on him today after his break last night.
Yeah.
Sent up 3 years ago for attempted robbery. He and his buddy tried to hold up a liquor store. His partner was killed. Nick Pantel, I think that was his name. Tommy was shot but recovered. He claimed it was a frame.
Now, why would anyone want to frame him?
Well, he didn't know. I guess that's why nobody believed him.
I see. Well, thanks, Sam.
Oh, anytime, Saint. That's an interesting egg on your forehead. You walk into a door?
No, someone slugged me.
Oh, now why would anybody want to slug you?
I don't know. I guess that's why nobody believes me.
Yeah. Well, stuff happens.
Yeah, stuff happens. Good night, Sam. Simon Templar, Nancy.
Oh, come in quickly.
Is anybody watching the house?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Oh, Mr. Templar, your face. What happened? Did Frank beat you up?
Well, he beat me up some, but I'm the durable type, pre-war construction.
Oh, I despise him. He's always hanging around as if he owns me. I hate him. I guess I'm afraid of him, too.
Well, what about Farrelly?
I don't know. You know, I get the feeling he's watching me all the time. I almost feel sometimes like that's why he's hired me, so he could watch me.
Does he know Tommy Patrick's your brother?
I don't know, but he knows everything. Maybe he does. What What's Tommy done? Why is somebody trying to have him killed? What's he done?
Oh, come on, Nancy. Here's a shoulder to cry on.
I'm sorry. I'm not the crying type. It's just that knowing that kid's out there somewhere cold and scared, hunted and alone.
Well, maybe he won't be alone. If we can reach him or if he can reach us. Does he know where you live?
Yeah. But how can he get to...
Shh. Someone outside the door.
Who?
We'll soon find out.
Frank!
Hey, you're quite an accomplished man, Frank. You tend bar, beat up the customers, listen at keyholes. What else do you do?
I take guys I find in my girl's room and I throw them downstairs.
Frank, get out!
Did you forget your blackjack, Frank? You might need it.
Big lady killing operator, eh? Well, come on. Let's see how you bounce.
Stop it, Frank!
Hey, stand still, Templar.
This is for the egg on the head, Frankie. Oh. And this is just because I don't like you.
Oh, Mr. Templar.
I hope your neighbors don't object to noisy parties, Nancy.
Come in, Mr. Templar. You hurt?
No, I'm not hurt. But I don't think I'll have Frankie mix me any more drinks.
You were pretty terrific.
Was I? Oh, well, no, I... Well, you know best. Good night, Nancy.
You're leaving?
Oh, no, indeed. Frankie might be back. I'll sit up and you take the bedroom. Now, get some rest. Did you sleep at all last night?
No, I kept waiting for Tommy.
Yeah, get some rest. I'll stretch out on the couch.
But if...
If Tommy comes, I'll awaken you.
All right, Mr. Templar.
Nancy.
Yes, Mr. Templar?
If I'm going to spend the night on your couch, you'd better call me Simon. Hey, Nancy.
Yes, Simon?
Do I smell coffee and bacon?
You do.
Nancy, men have married for such an aroma.
Well, breakfast will be ready in a minute.
Did you get any sleep?
No, I did finally. Simon, I wonder if they've picked up Tommy yet.
No, they didn't. I went out this morning around 6 and bought a paper. Here.
Let me see. Police narrow trap around Patrick. Escape bandit still at large. Oh, Simon, then... What's that?
It's your brother. He's on the fire escape.
Oh, Tommy!
Come on, now. Let me help you, Tommy. There you go.
I made it, sis.
Come on, now, take it easy.
Tommy, come here, sit down over here.
Yeah. Come on, now, that's it.
Don't talk. I'll get you breakfast and then put you to bed. You're all right now, Tommy.
Did anyone see you come in?
I don't know. I had a breakout, Saint. They'd kill me.
I know. Now, pull yourself together. We haven't got much time. Who's trying to kill you?
I think Pirelli.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know.
But you must.
Can't you let him alone?
I can't. Frank, Pirelli, the police, some of them or all of them will be here at any minute.
Don't let him take me back. They'll kill me.
Look, we've got to find out why, Tommy. Nancy, hand him some coffee.
All right, right away.
Thanks.
Now, you say Pirelli is trying to have you killed. That means you know something, or he thinks you do. What is it?
I don't know. Don't you think I've been trying to figure it out for 3 years?
Please let him alone.
I can't. You say the holdup was a frame, right?
We didn't even have guns. Nick and I just went in for some beer, and the owner started shooting at us. He got Nick, and he meant to get me, too. When I came through, there was a gun planted on me. One on Nick, too.
Did Nick know Pirelli?
Well, can't I rest for a while?
No, you've got to answer me.
Yeah, Nick knew Pirelli. I think he knew him in Sicily, but he never said. He was lazy, but he was a good guy.
It didn't work. Well, how did he get along?
I got the idea Pirelli gave him money. I don't know why.
And you were his friend?
Yeah, we lived in the same room and house on 3rd.
I know where it is, yeah. I was there yesterday and met your charming landlady. Did Nick ever tell you anything about Pirelli? About anything at all?
Oh, can't you? He's exhausted.
Look, would you rather see him exhausted or dead? Tell me, Tommy, did Nick ever tell you anything about Pirelli?
Just
go on.
Just as if anything ever happened to him. To Nick, I was to look for the ace in the hole.
Did you? No, you couldn't. You were shot and railroaded into prison. What happened to Nick's things, do you know?
They were sold, I guess. He kept everything he had in an old trunk.
An old trunk? Any chance it might still be at the rooming house?
Maybe. I don't know.
Tommy, look. Is there any way we can get into that house without being seen? The police are watching it.
I don't know.
Oh, you've got to know.
Yeah, I do. Yes, through the backyard, next door, then through the garage.
Come on, Nancy. We're taking him out of here.
You can't move him now, Simon.
We'll move him if we have to carry him. If we leave him here for Ellie, we'll kill him. Come on, if that trunk is still there, we've got a chance. Louis, listen very carefully.
Go ahead, Mr. Temple. It's your nickel.
Are you feeling particularly reckless today?
Wait, what do you mean?
How would you like to take somebody for a ride?
Well, Mr. Temple, there's nothing I wouldn't do for you, you know that. But take somebody for a ride. My wife wouldn't like that.
You haven't got a wife.
Yeah, but if I had one, she wouldn't like it. No, honest, Mr. Temple, I never bumped off nobody my whole life.
I know that, and I wouldn't expect you to start now. I just want you to take somebody for a ride in your cab.
Oh!
Yeah, that somebody is somebody the police want. I don't want them to find him just yet.
Gotcha.
Well, look, don't hit any bumps. He's in pretty bad condition.
Don't worry, Mr. Temple. He'll think he's in a baby buggy.
Louis, I like you.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Temple, I bet you say that to all the cab drivers.
Stand right behind this door, Nancy, until I...
Hey, what are you doing sneaking in the back way? This is a respectable rooming house. Or it would be if I had respectable roomers.
Look, Mother, I haven't much time. Do you remember Nick Pantel?
Nick? Sure I do. He was shot 3 years ago, dead now.
Yes, I know. Did he leave a trunk here?
I've got a very bad memory.
Here.
Well, I sold the trunk.
What?
At least the stuff in it. I had a perfect right. He didn't give me my 2 weeks' notice before leaving.
Is the trunk still here?
It's down in the cellar, this door here.
Oh, thank you.
That's okay. I won't mention it to anybody. Won't even mention the Tommy Patchek sisters standing right in my hall behind the door. Of course, the cops would be kind of interested because they're looking for a brother, but just the same...
And you've got a perfect right to call the police if you want to.
Oh, not me. I hate cops. Of course, if they was to ask me, I've got such a good memory.
Here.
Thanks. It's going back on me again.
Wait a minute, Nancy, till I get the light. You see it?
I think so. There's only one trunk here.
Looks like Ferrelli covered this angle years ago, huh? The lining's ripped up. So's the bottom.
It's no use, then.
Perhaps. But perhaps Nick Pantel read Poe's the purloined letter. You see this waybill on the trunk?
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it comes off.
How's that prove?
That the best hiding place is sometimes the most obvious. Look, there's a newspaper clipping on the other side. It's in Italian.
Can you translate it?
I'll find someone who can, and when
save
I do...
Save yourself the trouble, Mr. Templer.
Son.
Well, hello, Ferrelli.
Hi, Mac.
Hi.
I'll take that clipping. Keep him covered, Frank. Thank you.
What do you propose to do now?
What do I propose to do now? What would you do?
Nothing. You're licked, Ferrelli. You can destroy that clipping, but I can guess what it says. You committed a crime in Sicily years ago and had to flee the country. Probably you killed a man. Nick Pantel knew it and was blackmailing you. You had him killed. Then you tried to have Tommy killed at the same time, just because he might know.
Just because he might know, And if I committed this crime, Mr. Templer, why didn't they extradite me?
Because Mussolini was making the trains run on time and accepting bribes whenever they came along. Since then, you haven't been too sure, Ferrelli.
Everything is for sale, Mr. Templer. You've got the money. Where's Tommy, Nancy?
She doesn't know, Ferrelli.
Do you?
I think I'll just let you brood about that one.
What do you think we should do, Frank?
Well, it looks like him or you, Mr. Ferrelli.
How about the girl, Frank?
I don't know her.
Frank.
You heard what he said, kid. Well, Frank?
No.
It won't work, Ferrelli.
It won't work. Well, difference of opinion is what makes horse races.
Hey, get back, you...
Put up the gun. There's enough holes in the floor already. There's cops all over the house and outside.
Who called them?
I did.
Mother, and you hated cops.
I did, but I remembered there was a reward out for Tommy, and I figured Nancy knew where he was. Hurt me to go back on my principles, but... I forced myself.
Hey, what'll we do, boss?
Mr. Ferrelli's a sensible man, Frank. He'll go back to the old country. That's better than facing a murder rap here, isn't it?
Yes, much better. Put up the gun, Frank.
Well, not before I...
Give me that, Frankie. Give me that before I break your martini arm. There.
Very impetuous young man, Frank.
Oh, he might have killed you, Frank.
Yeah, but he didn't. Shall we go, Ferrelli?
Yes, we'll go. But it's only a question of time for me, Mr. Templer. I'll be back. In any sensible society, money can buy anything.
And when we return to, shall I say, sensible basis, I'll be back.
And if you come back, I won't be here.
No. In the meantime, I'll read up on Poe. He might have saved me a lot of trouble.
Hey, Tommy Patchek got a full pardon, Mr. Templer. Gee, that's swell.
Yeah, Tommy deserved a few good breaks, Louie.
Yeah. There's just two things about that case that bother me, Mr. Templer.
Oh, what are they, Louie?
You think a guy like Farrelly could ever come back to this country like you said?
He'll be trying, Louie. So it's up to you and me.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the other thing?
Well, you know that day you had me drive Tommy Patchek all over town in this cab when the cops was looking for him?
Yeah.
Well, all he talked about was his sister. What a wonderful girl she was. And how pretty.
Yes?
Well, he was saying how hard she worked all her life and how regular she was. And how pretty.
Yes?
And I just wondered, that's all, you know, if a girl was that pretty.
Louis, the Voodoo Club is under new management. New owner, new bartender, but the same cigarette girl.
Yeah?
Well, let's drive over there. You seem to be out of cigarettes.
You've been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in tonight's cast you heard Peggy Weber as the landlady and Sheldon Leonard as Frank. Victor Rodman was Farrelly, Peter Leeds, Sam. Dick Crenna played Tommy, Fred Shields the warden. Larry Dobkin plays Louie. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
The script of The Saint was written by Dick Powell. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is now starring in The Winslow Boy at the Las Palmas Theater here in Hollywood. Your announcer is Don Stanley.
There you have The Saint, going back to November 19th, 1950, with No Hiding Place, starring Vincent Price as Simon Templar. And a great cast. You heard Vincent Price announcing the cast, so I don't have to do it. But at the end, you heard them say Dick Powell was the writer of this. And I'm guessing it's the same Dick Powell who was the actor, singer, who played Richard Diamond, private detective. Maybe not. I can't say for sure. But Dick Powell, I know, did do some writing and producing. He actually produced the Richard Diamond television series as well. He starred on the radio series. But then when David Janssen played Richard Diamond on television, he produced it. So I think he did some writing too. This was heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed The Saint. Now, Vincent Price appears in our next radio show that we're going to air. It's called Suspense. You won't want to miss it. He co-stars along with Claude Rains in The Hands of Mr. Ottermole from 1948. Then in our third hour on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune in to Raymond Burr starring in Fort Laramie, the very first episode in the series called Playing Indian. So that's our agenda for this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. You like that, Lisa? Doesn't have any comedies, though.
Well, I like it because I came up with it.
I know.
So I'm pretty happy with myself.
We have a lot of people posting to Facebook saying, where are the comedies? This is going to happen. We'll do it next week. We'll play some comedies next week. I'll try to make sure we air at least one or two comedies every weekend here because I think people like.
Yeah,
like
we
the
didn't.
Comedies.
That's my favorite as well. But we didn't realize that everybody else felt that way.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break. Yep. Then Lisa and I will be right back here on the WGN Radio Theater. There's our familiar theme, Lisa Wolf. You're wide awake. You haven't yawned at all. I haven't seen you stretching or yawning or snoring or anything.
I'm good to go. My Pellegrino is doing me well. This was Roger Badish's idea.
Oh, Pellegrino.
Yeah. So I listened.
So what, we abandoned LaCroix? I mean, well,
just for the moment.
If LaCroix wants to sponsor our show, we'll drink it every single Saturday and Sunday night.
And I'll even do commercials for Tootsie Rolls if Roger sends them
over. Hold the LaCroix.
Yeah. I have half a bag full.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, the Pellegrino, you know, if you get them to sponsor, then you might be able to go to Italy to see the bottling plant.
Now,
I don't know
that
where LaCroix
would be important.
Is done.
Got any connections?
We'll talk.
All right. Listen, I am easily bought. I will be able to hold. I'll hold the Pellegrino. I'll drink it. I'll do whatever they want. I'll do it with LaCroix. I'd even wear a bathing suit and do it
Please
in a bathing
don't.
Suit.
Let's not
Please
get too
don't.
Carried away.
Let's not go too far, right?
No, that won't be good.
I mean, the things I would be willing to do for a major sponsor like that. Right.
I'm with you.
I can't.
Until we got to bathing suit, and then I lost you there.
You'll wear a bathing suit, and I'll wear a bathing suit if a big sponsor wants us to.
Okay. Yes,
got
sir.
Yes,
whatever you say, sir.
We will. but this Pellegrino is very yummy.
It's good.
Very good. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Roger.
You're very
for
nice.
Us. Very sweet of you, Lisa. Thank you.
Well, of course.
This
Carl.
Is show 42 on the WGN Radio Theater here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., and we play classic radio shows.
We are in the showcase studio, and I don't understand why nobody's walking by tonight.
Because it's 30 below zero.
There's nobody out there.
I mean, not a single soul
is out
there.
It's pretty quiet out there.
When we were walking just from the car to here, oh, man, was it cold.
It's cold. Although, you know, when Roger says it's cold, he gasps.
Yeah, it's really, really cold. but we have some warm radio shows coming your way.
Yes, we do.
Good Mystery with Vincent Price and Claude Rains in suspense. Then Raymond Burr stars in the very first episode of Fort Laramie. All that's coming your way. But first, our sponsor segment, the Celebrity Scoop segment with Katz Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Katz Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming thriller Exposed, about a police detective who investigates his partner's death while a woman experiences strange things after witnessing a miracle.
All right, if you can name this celebrity, and I'm going to give you a hint in a second, you'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Now, this actor starred in the 1994 drama Speed.
50, stay above 50,
alright? There you go. If you can name that celebrity, call us right now, 312-981-7200, and you'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's if you can get on the air with us and tell us who that actor is. We'll find our winner after this short break. Ooh, it scared me. Whew. Scared me right there. Big trucks, big danger with more trucks crowding. Will County Roads, how residents are trying to hit the brakes. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
You scare me, Carl. We are back on the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
50, stay above 50, all right?
And we have Janet on the line from Elk Grove Village. Hey, Janet.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine. How are you guys?
Great. We're hoping you can name that celebrity for us.
Keanu Reeves?
Exactly right. He was not only in Speed, but he will be starring in the upcoming thriller Exposed. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for my favorite pizza, Lou Malnati's. You can get a great deep dish pizza there and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check them out at loumalnati's.com. I hope you enjoy that.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Janet.
Appreciate you listening. Congratulations for winning. And it's time now, Lisa, for, in my opinion, the best radio show of all time. The best radio series, I should say. It was on the air from 1942 until 1962. And we're talking about Suspense. It was a mystery series conceived originally as a potential radio vehicle for Alfred Hitchcock to direct. That's what they kind of brainstormed. The CBS executive said, hey, let's create a radio series and we'll get Alfred Hitchcock to direct it each week. But that didn't happen.
No.
He directed the pilot episode and that was it. But it was considered the best mystery drama series of the Golden Age. It was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. It was suspenseful thrillers, biggest names in Hollywood starred in it. I mean, actors like Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart, Orson Welles. These great actors appeared before the suspense microphones. And that's because it had a big budget, mm-hmm. and they were able to get these big movie stars. And it was on the air 20 years, nearly 1,000 radio broadcasts, and then it did move to TV in 1949. I don't think it was as good on television as it was on radio. And we're going to listen to an episode now starring Claude Rains and Vincent Price going back to December 2nd, 1948. It's called The Hands of Mr. Ottermole. A great, great story. Here's part one now of Suspense.
In just a moment, Autolite presents Suspense with Claude Rains and Vincent Price.
Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Claude Rains and Mr. Vincent Price in Anton Leder's production of The Hands of Mr. Ottermore. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tell me, Sergeant.
Yes?
Why do you think the Strangler killed the five times he did?
Six times, Mr. Newspaper Man.
Six?
Yes.
Well, I suppose you do know as much about the Strangler as I do. How long have you been on the police force, Sergeant?
This is my 15th year as a member of His Majesty's Metropolitan Police, Mr. Newspaper Man. For 10 years, I walked the beats of the Casper Street Station, and for the past 5 years, I've been a sergeant of that station. In 15 years, you learn a lot about many things, including murder.
Oh, yes, murder. It's a word and a deed which has fascinated more people than you and I could count. By all means, Sergeant, let's talk about murder.
You'd think there'd be little murder in such a district, wouldn't you, Mr. Newspaper Man? Murder for a bit of Henning, cup of tea. There's nothing there to take except lives. And it was there that the Strangler came to practice his grim trade. Already he'd struck twice. Once on Lagos Street, once on Breen Street. His strong, white hands reaching for an unexpected throat. Then he'd vanished into the darkness, leaving behind something that once had been a living, breathing human. What was his gain? Perhaps no more than the satisfaction of a job well done. Perhaps he felt he'd done some poor devil a favor, that a sympathetic force led him to his victims the same as a cyclone picks one corner and misses another. I was thinking about that the night I first met you, Mr. Newspaper Man. I was walking down Mallon End when I saw you, standing in the shadows.
Good evening, officer.
Stand where you are. Who are you?
From the Daily Herald, officer.
Oh, newspaper man, eh?
Yes.
What are you doing here?
Oh, looking for a story. Are you expecting to catch the Strangler, officer?
What would you know about the Strangler, Mr. Newspaper Man?
Only that he likes your district and that you have no idea who he is.
That's right. He could be anybody who's about in this district at night. Perhaps even a newspaper man.
Oh, you suspect that I might be making my news before I write it? And I shall keep that in mind for dull days. Good night, sir.
All right. I watched you, Mr. Newspaper Man, as you walked away. Watched and thought of the force that moved the Strangler. About the same time, that force, whatever it was, brought the Strangler to Mr. Wybrow, an honest worker, whom I've seen so many times, I can tell you nearly exactly how he spent his last few minutes on Earth. I know the very sound of his footsteps, almost his every thought. And I can hear the footsteps of the man who followed him. It was 6 o'clock of an evening, and Mr. Wybrow was going home from work. He stepped off the tram at High Street and Mallon End and walked slowly, wondering if his missus would have herring or haddock for his tea. It was a wretched night, and he could taste the fog in his throat, feel the dampness through the soles of his shoes. He turned down Lagos Street, and the footsteps behind turned with him. And so, one behind the other, the two men walked through Lagos and turned into Loyal Lane. Any man other than Mr. Wybrow might have heard some warning in the footsteps that followed him. Something that said, beware. 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 No. The foot of a killer falls just as quietly as the foot of any other worker. But those footfalls were bearing a pair of hands to Mr. Wybrow. And there is something in hands. Behind him, even then, those hands were flexing themselves, feeling the strength run down through the strong fingers. Mr. Wybrow was almost home. He turned down Casper Street, plodding along through the dim light. Small dog barked at the figures. Voices drifted out from the shabby houses, but Mr. Wybrow paid no attention to them or to the steps which followed him. Ahead of Mr. Wybrow was his own house, and he walked a little faster. Maybe it looked like he was going to get away, but the man behind only smiled and followed at the same pace. Mr. Wybrow turned in at his own gate and opened the door. He stepped inside.
Is that you, Eddie?
Yes. What's for tea, Flossie?
Eddie, you're lucky to be getting that. Who's that?
How do I know? Before I've opened the door. If it's a collector, he can just nip off. Well, what?
And that is how Mr. and Mrs. Wybrow became the third and fourth, but not the last, victims of the strangling horror.
Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Mr. Claude Rains and Mr. Vincent Price in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Sergeant, did you ever stop to wonder at the pranks of fate? Mr. Wybrow died at the one moment when there was no one around to witness his death.
That's true.
A few minutes earlier, perhaps a few minutes later, there were people on the street. Think how different it might have been if you had arrived there earlier than you did.
Perhaps, Mr. Newspaper Man, but I'd finished my evening tea and was walking through Casper Street to the station. Mr. Wybrow was still lying on the door of his house, his wife on the floor a little beyond him. Both were dead. I blew my whistle. And the constable came on the run. He searched the house, then talked to the neighbors on either side. Nobody had heard anything except Mrs. Wybrow's scream, and they thought that just a family fight. There was no sign of anything but brutal murder. While we waited for the ambulance, I suddenly remembered something. Smithers?
Yes, sir?
Just before I found them, I saw you standing at the end of the lane. What were you up to there?
I thought I saw a suspicious character mucking about there, sir, and I was keeping an eye on him.
Suspicious character, but blasted. You don't want to look for suspicious characters. You want to look for murderers.
Yes, sir. Think we'll get him, sir?
Well, just between you and me, Smithers, I have my doubts. With a man who kills to get a few bob, you know he's going to keep on, because as soon as he's broke, he'll slosh another one. But a man like this, you don't know when he'll strike again, or if he'll strike again. Back at the station, the newspaper men were waiting for the story, having scented it the way dogs will smell out the fresh track of a fox. There was one newspaper man, a tall, with shoulders and arms that looked more like a coal heaver than a journalist, who kept asking about clues as though he wanted to solve the case himself. That was you, Mr. Newspaper Man, or maybe you just wanted to find out how much we knew. After the newspaper men left, I was in my office finishing up my report when there was a knock on the door. Who's there?
Oh, do you mind if I come in, Sergeant?
Oh, it's you.
Yes, I thought of a few more questions I'd like to ask you.
Well, it seems to me you are around all the time.
So?
Yes. And now you want to ask more questions. I'm afraid we can't give out any more information than you already have.
Half a minute, Sergeant. All the papers are going to do a regular story on the strangling monster. I thought I'd like to do something different, more of a mood piece. Now, you look like an intelligent man, Sergeant.
Thanks.
I thought you might help.
Well, maybe I can, maybe I can't. What do you want to know?
What sort of a man do you think the killer is? You really think he's a monster who can slip through the night without being seen?
No, I think he's probably a very ordinary man. Everyone, even our own constables, is looking for the monster instead of the man standing next to them. No, this man can move about and no one sees him because he's an ordinary man and it's ordinary for him to be around. He might be a bootblack, the man who makes deliveries, or even a policeman. Or a journalist.
Why do you say that?
I don't think I meant anything personal, Mr. Newspaper Man. I meant that he is merely someone you look at and never think that maybe he might strangle someone.
Your theory is very interesting, Sergeant. And do you also think that you'll catch him?
Well, if he's caught, short of actually catching him in the act, it'll be because of only one thing.
Oh, and that is?
Curiosity.
Curiosity?
Yes. He'll be nabbed if his curiosity is too great. If he wonders how near others are to him. If he has to ask questions and then returns to ask still more questions.
Don't ask so many questions, Lisa. Right?
Me?
That's what he was saying.
Yeah,
saying,
I know. I heard him.
Suspense.
Didn't know if you were talking to me about that, though.
The Hands of Mr. Ottermole with Claude Rains and Vincent Price, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, originally broadcast December 2nd, 1948. We'll get back to suspense here on the WGN Radio Theater after this short break. Should we tune this in now, the suspense conclusion?
I think that would be a good idea.
All right. This is The Hands of Mr. Ottermole, Claude Rains, and Vincent Price, the conclusion to suspense.
Later that evening, I went out into the district, visiting beat after beat. The presence of the killer, the Standing Hollow, was in the air. The entire district was given over not to panic, for London never yields to that, but to fear of the unknown. And while the community still gasped over the deaths of Mr. and Mrs. Wybrow, while fear was moving into every tenement, the killer made his next move. Conscious of the horror caused by his hands and as hungry for more as any giddy girl at her first performance in the music hall, his hands reached out again. Well, I was cutting through Clemens Street when I saw you again, Mr. Newspaper Man. You slipped along the street, peering into alleys. Even then I had a hunch to stop you, yet I felt I had no real reason to suspect you, so I walked on. Peterson and Joyner were patrolling Joinigan Road. It was just 9:32 when I met Joyner near the middle of the street. I spoke to him and went on. At 9:33, I met Peterson coming back from the other end of the street. I answered his greeting and passed, intending to go to the end of the beat and cut over to Logan Passage. Then, during the few seconds that everyone's back was turned towards the spot where he stood, the killer struck again.
Joyner, here. What the? Good heavens! It's Peterson.
Yeah, it's Peterson, dead like the rest of them, strangled right under our noses. Where were you, Joyner?
I just reached the end of my beat, Sergeant. Was already turning when I heard your whistle.
And I just passed him on my way to Logan.
Then we were covering both ends of the street. He must have come from Minnow Street, or Clemming Street, and gone back the same way before we could see him. It is dimly lit around here, sir.
Yeah, I say, what's up, Constable? I heard...
Stand where you are. Oh. It's you, Mr. Newspaper Man?
Yes. So he struck again. What happened, Sergeant?
I've been checking the beats. Huh. I came up here passing Joyner and then Peterson here. I was at this end of the street, Joyner at that, with Peterson in between us going towards Joyner. He cried out once and then was like this. We saw no one. Where were you when you heard my whistle?
On Clemming Street, perhaps half a square down, and no one passed that way.
That means that he must have come from Minnow. Shall I ring in, sir?
Yeah, go ahead, Joyner. Half a square down Clemming Street, were you?
That's right.
That's where you were more than 5 minutes ago when I passed and you were coming this way.
Well, I thought I saw something in one of the alleys and stopped to look closer. Oh, now, come, Sergeant, let's not start suspecting each other. The mutual suspicion of this district is catching.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
Yes, of course.
Still, there's a murderer who must be caught, Mr. Newspaper Man. The following day, I was back on duty early. You know, the sight of a uniformed sergeant somehow gave the people a bit more confidence than that of the constables. Oh, Bobby's are well enough in their way, but you know, your average Londoner likes to see more important officials around when things are a bit rough. The talk in the pubs and on the streets was all cut from the same cloth. And the pattern was fear.
I say the strangler's some posh who's off his beam. Thinks as how we ain't squeezed dry enough. So he nips over, squeezes a little more, and pops back to the West End.
Oh, you're balmy. Eat a leg. Didn't he get a peeler last night, and don't that prove it?
He's a bleeding Jack the Ripper. That's what he is. And he'll bloody well kill a lot of us without a single bloody flick to stop him.
He got a Bobby, didn't he? And with Bobby's crawling all over the place and not one to lay a hand on him. And who's to stop him? That's what I want to know.
I walked the streets, dropping a bit of cheer here and there. Four or five times I saw you again, Mr. Newspaper Man. Your dark face twisted with emotion as you listened to the talk. This, too, was queer, for you were the only newspaper man I saw in the whole district. By 9 o'clock, I was in Richards Lane, a narrow street, partly a stall market and partly cheap homes. On one side was the shattered wall of the railway yard. The wall of the railway yard put a shadow over the street so that even a garbage can looked like a man crouching. Farther down the street, the outline of the empty market stalls looked like a bunch of ghosts waiting for the man who would send them more ghosts. There was no one on the street, no one to witness that which was about to be. Then, suddenly, in the time between one footfall and another, the wall of silence was broken.
Help! He's here!
And then the lane came to life. It seemed like they were all released by that scream. All along the street, doors opened and people poured into the street, muttering as the stored-up anger began to overcome their fear. They milled around, uncertain which way to turn. Then the whistle pointed the direction to them. Gathering like dark clouds, they moved down on the cottage where I stood with the constables. The sight of so many of us made them feel that he would now be caught, and that anger came up in answer to it.
Well, go in and get him. What you waiting for? He's through killing now. Go on and get him, you bloody feelers.
He ought to be strung up, that's what
Break it up. Move back, all of you. Joiner, get around to the back and meet the constables there. Martin, Addison, take the house on the left. Jones, Edmonds, take the house on the right. Betts, you come with me.
Save a piece of him for me, Sergeant.
Inside the cottage, a whole family lay dead, fallen around the supper table. One look at their necks showed us the strangler's trademark again, but there was nothing in that cottage except death. One by one, the constables came back to report. Nothing. Once more, he had killed and slipped away. Again, I looked out at the crowd, now beginning to move back as they realized we were empty-handed. Suddenly I saw in the front ranks your face again, the newspaper man who seemed to be everywhere I turned. There was a light in your face, a light that was almost happiness. And looking at you in that brief second, I was aware that there were two of us who now knew the identity of the murderer. As the crowd shifted back, began to lose themselves in the shadows, and you were gone before I could move. The strangler had struck again, and again we were empty-handed as we waited for the ambulance.
You may have been empty-handed, Sergeant, but I'm sure there were enough thoughts in your head to make up for the lack of something to put your hands on. Dark thoughts, perhaps.
Yes, I did think, Mr. Newspaper Man. I tried to imagine what you were doing during the next hour. I thought perhaps that you went to the nearest pub and sat alone at the bar, attended by a frightened barmaid. I think you dismissed the strangling horror from your mind and thought only of the glass of stout and the sandwich, for even such men as you must rebuild their strength. I think you looked at the sandwich, noticing that it was skimpy, as bar sandwiches usually are, and you may have thought idly of the inventor of the sandwich, the Earl of Sandwich, then of George the Fourth, then of all the Georges, as any good Englishman might, and so to that George who wondered how the apple got into the apple dumpling. It was while thinking of that, and how the ham got into the ham sandwich, that your mind came back to the people who had been murdered. Maybe it was then that you thought of the simplest fact of all, that the murderer could escape by either running away or by standing still. It was then, I think, that you got up from the bar without finishing your sandwich. It was perhaps 20 minutes later that you walked down the street and met the man you were looking for.
Well, seen anything of the murderer, Sergeant?
Oh, it's you again.
Yes.
No, nor is anybody else. And I doubt if they ever will.
No, I don't know. He's already struck 5 times. I've been thinking about it, and I've got an idea.
So?
Yes, came to me all of a sudden. And I felt that we'd all been blind. It's been staring us in the face.
Oh? Has it now? Huh. Well, if you're so sure, why not give us the benefit of it?
I'm going to. Yes, it seems quite simple now. But there's still one more point I don't quite understand. I mean the motive. Now, as man to man, tell me, Sergeant Otto Mole, just why did you kill those inoffensive people?
Well, to tell the truth, Mr. Newspaper Man, I don't know. But I've got an idea, just like you. Everybody knows we can't control the workings of our mind. Ideas come into our heads without being asked. But everybody's supposed to be able to control his body. Why? We get our minds from heaven knows where, from people who were dead years before we were born, some say. Maybe we get our bodies the same way. Our faces, our legs, our hands. They aren't completely ours. And couldn't ideas come into our bodies like ideas come into our minds? Couldn't ideas live in muscles as well as in a brain? Couldn't it be that parts of our bodies aren't really us? And couldn't ideas come into them all of a sudden like ideas come into my hand? You see, Mr. Newspaper Man? It was 6. One other thing the newspaper man did while he was in that pub. He'd called his newspaper and told them his idea, and said he was coming to meet me. And so, they're hanging me, killing me, for something which my hands did. I had nothing to do with it. You can see that. But what hurts me the most is what the judge said when he sentenced me. It's not true. It's not true, I tell you. That if I lived, someday these hands, my hands, they say, might reach out for you.
Thank you, Claude Rains and Vincent Price, for a splendid performance. And now here again is Mr. Claude Rains.
The Hands of Mr. Ottermole has always been one of my favorite mystery stories, and so it was a great pleasure to be able to play it on Suspense, one of my favorite radio programs. What about you, Vincent?
Well, I agree with you on both counts, Claude. And in addition, I found it refreshing to play the murder victim for a change instead of the murderer. By the way, Claude, what will we be hearing on Suspense next week?
A treat you won't want to miss. One of Hollywood's most glamorous stars, Miss Rosalind Russell, in a top story, The Sisters. Another gripping study in...
Suspense.
Claude Rains will soon be seen in the Paramount picture, The Sin of Abby Hunt. Vincent Price can currently be seen with Lana Turner, Gene Kelly, and June Allison in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Technicolor production, The Three Musketeers. Tonight's suspense play was the famous story by Thomas Burke, adapted for radio by Ken Crossan, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as James Cagney, Ronald Coleman, William Bendix, and others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And next Thursday, same time, hear Rosalind Russell in The Sisters.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Turn in your scrap steel to your local scrap dealer. The more scrap, the more steel. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, one of the best radio series of all time, certainly the best mystery series, Suspense, from an original broadcast date, December 2nd, 1948. That's The Hands of Mr. Ottermole, starring Claude Rains, who in the movies played the Invisible Man, also Vincent Price, and that was sponsored by Autolite. In the cast, Verna Felton and Raymond Lawrence, and Paul Frees doing the announcing, along with Harlow Wilcox as the commercial spokesman. As heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Suspense. And we play a lot of suspense here because, as I say, almost 1,000 radio broadcasts of Suspense over the years from 1942 through 1962. It was one of the last great radio shows that they really held out. They went all the way into 1962. Very few radio shows had the staying power as Suspense because, you know, as you know, Lisa, in the late 50s, in the mid to late 50s, people were sort of abandoning radio drama, turning to television, and the radio was turning into sort of DJ shows and things. Very little dramatic radio from, let's say, about 1955 to the 60s, and this stayed all the way to 1962. And we were happy it did because we have pretty much every broadcast from this series available to play here on the WGN Radio Theater. Yeah?
Yes, and we play it because we love it.
Yes, we do. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and tell you what we have still to come this morning here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, wake up.
Carl, I'm up.
Lisa.
Wake up.
Wake up.
I have a video of you snoring, so you better be nice to me.
This is true. She really does. It is 6 minutes after 1 a.m. on Monday morning. Thank you, Lisa. Lisa Wolf, my co-host, my right-hand person. You are my Tonto.
Your right hand, my left hand.
You are my, what else? You're my Cato. You are my...
Second banana around here.
You are something else. You're my right-hand person, I'll tell you. You're something else. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome to the show. If you're just tuning us in, we have classic radio shows for you. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. Then Nick DiGilio will be here to take things all the way into the wee hours of the morning. This hour, we're going to tune in to the very first episode of a very cool radio series, kind of a Western series called Fort Laramie, and it stars Raymond Burr, and it's going back to 1956. That's coming your way in just a few minutes, but first, our Celebrity Scoop segment.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming comedy How to Be Single. about a group of friends who need to learn how to be single in a world filled with ever-evolving definitions of love.
All right, so the prize to win is a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. And if you can name this celebrity from the from that clue that Lisa just gave you, and I'm going to give you one now, call 312-981-7200. In the 2005 comedy 40-Year-Old Virgin, she appears as a drunk driver with passenger Steve Carell fearing for his life.
You think I'm pretty?
Oh, yes. Go. Oh, God. Yes. Oh.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
You're not looking at
yes,
me.
Yes, you're pretty.
Do you think I'm pretty? Mm-hmm. Look at me. Mm-hmm. Look at me. Mm-hmm. Look at me.
I'm looking. You're pretty. You're pretty. God, I just want to live.
One of my favorite scenes from this movie.
Too.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is, the gal, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are playing Celebrity Scoop right here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Oh, yes. Go. Oh, God. Yes. Oh.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
You're not looking at
yes,
me.
Yes, you're pretty.
Do you think I'm pretty? Mm-hmm. Look at me. Mm-hmm. Look at me. Mm-hmm. Look at me.
I'm looking. You're pretty. You're pretty. God, I just want to live.
Oh, I'm cringing. Just listen to that clip.
Oh, God,
that is so fantastic.
It's one of the funniest movies of all time.
That is a great movie. That's The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Dan took a call for us off the air. We had Lauren from Buffalo Grove as the winner, and she correctly identified Leslie Mann, who is going to be in How to Be Single, and certainly she was the crazy driver in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
She's such a talented actress. I love her in everything she's in.
So congratulations, Lauren. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's Pizza, the best Chicago deep dish pizza around. You can check out their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and go to loumalnatis.com to order online. Thanks so much for calling in, Lauren.
All right. Time for our third classic radio show for this edition, our 41st edition of the WGN Radio Theater. And as I said earlier, we're here Saturday and Sunday nights. Don't miss a single weekend with Lisa and I and all of these classic radio shows. We come on the air at 11 p.m. on Saturday and 11 p.m. on Sunday till 2 a.m. in the morning. You can check out our Facebook page by searching us at WGN Radio Theater. Please like us when you do. We'd love to build our likes. And our website is WGNRadioTheater.com. But time now for Fort Laramie. It was an adult Western. It's heard on CBS. It came to radio in 1956. It had the very deep-voiced Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince of the U.S. Cavalry. It was produced by Gunsmoke's Norman McDowell. Norman McDonald, he was the same producer on Gunsmoke. It depicted the life at Fort Laramie in the mid-1800s. The fort was located across the North Platte River from the town of Laramie at the mouth of the Laramie River. And the regulars on this show, Vic Perrin, Harry Bartell, Howard McNair, Sam Edwards, John Daner. It only lasted one season because it came pretty late. Mm-hmm. Came on the air in 1956. And I think you're going to enjoy this. This is the very first episode in the series. It's going back to January 22nd, 1956. It's called Playing Indian. Here's Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince on Fort Laramie.
Fort Laramie. Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Captain Quince.
Sergeant Gorse, how are you?
Oh, it's sure good to see you, Captain. You look kind of funny, though.
What do you mean?
Well, them clothes, mufti. I ain't used to you out of uniform.
I'll be back in uniform at midnight tonight, Sergeant. We'll stay in town till then. And you can buy me a drink.
Me? I thought you was going to get rich in St. Louis.
Did I say that?
Well, you talked about nothing else before your leave come through.
Just proves you shouldn't believe everything you hear, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. I'll try to remember that.
See that you do. And to really fool you, I may go back to St. Louis.
Quit the army?
Man can make money there, Sergeant. I don't mean gambling. I mean honestly. In an honest business, buying things. Selling them.
Well, sir, the army's sure no place for a man who wants to get rich. I'll say that.
The army's no place for a man who wants to do any living at all. You're either turning black with the boredom of garrison, or you're riding hell-bent into nowhere.
That's sure enough true, Captain.
Well, come on, let's get our drink. How's B Company, Sergeant?
Company's fine, sir. Major Daggett's going to be mighty glad to see you back at Fort Laramie.
He isn't going to see me till midnight.
He'll be waiting up. Send me into town to tell you.
Huh? Something wrong?
Yes, sir.
Well, what?
Arapahoes. They've been raiding for horses. Massacred a whole family over in the basin about 10 days ago.
You mean they jumped the reservation?
Not the whole tribe, just a few of them, I guess. Mr. Seibert's took B Company out last week, but he didn't have any luck.
Why not?
I don't know, Captain. I wasn't with him.
What?
I've been on sick list till 2 days ago.
Sick list? You?
Yes, sir. Pack mule kicked me in the belly.
Oh. Well, a little whiskey will cure that, Sergeant. Well, here we are.
Mr. Seibert's is feeling mighty bad about it.
Your belly?
Like I said, it's good to have you back, Captain.
Bottle of rye and 2 glasses.
Come up. The army. And Moylan. Look at what came in.
What's his trouble?
8 soldiers, I guess. Like a lot of people. Since Richmond.
Yeah. Too much war, maybe. I guess everybody'd like to forget it now.
We all like to forget it. There's a war still going on.
You're right, sir. Who do they think stands between them and all the hostiles out there waiting to hack them to pieces? Who does all their dirty work for them?
It isn't like people to be grateful for any favors, Sergeant.
No, sir, I guess not.
When I think of the troops aching for home while they sweat and freeze and spill their blood all over the frontier for 50 cents a day, it makes me mad.
Tell me about St. Louis, Captain.
Here's your liquor, gentlemen.
Hey, you! Hold it!
You know them, Sergeant?
No, sir.
What's your trouble, mister?
My name ain't mister. It's Rudio. I ain't talking to you. I'm talking to the soldier.
I'm with the soldier.
You stay out of this. You know what's good for you.
You tell him, Moylan.
What do you want from me? I never saw you before.
Yeah. You won't want to see us again after we're through with you.
What's this all about?
We don't like soldiers drinking where we drink, mister. We like to teach them a lesson now and then. Don't we, Moylan?
Yeah, we do it, too.
Now, just
shut up, mister.
What's the matter with you? Coming in here with a soldier. Gonna drink with him, too.
Rudio, I just guess that he ain't no better than no soldier himself. Just scum floating with scum. That's what I call it. Well?
Okay. Sergeant Gorse?
Yes, sir.
You can have more than there.
Thank you, sir.
Move out.
I'll buy you that drink now, Captain Quince.
You can buy the first one, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
You're half an hour late, Captain Quince.
I was on the post at midnight, Major. I wanted to get back into uniform before reporting.
I'm glad of that, anyway.
I kind of figured you would be.
You still think I'm too Army, don't you, Lee?
We've known each other a long time, Major.
Since Vicksburg with Grant.
I remember a night in Chattanooga you weren't very Army. I've forgotten the girl's name, of course.
Captain Quince, I trust Sergeant Gorse told you about the Arapaho trouble.
Yeah. They're out raiding for horses. They've slaughtered a family over in the basin.
It's got to be stopped. Settlers are beginning to wonder what the 2nd Cavalry's doing at Fort Laramie.
If this goes on, there won't be any settlers.
Hard enough homesteading this country without a man waiting for him and his family to be massacred by renegade Indians.
I'll take a patrol out in a few days, have a look around.
You'll take B Company out tomorrow morning.
May I make a suggestion, Major Daggett?
If it's in order.
Lieutenant Syberts took B Company out and found nothing. Sure, he's green, but a few Arapaho can hide easy from a whole troop of cavalry beating its way through this country. Give me 12 men. I'll scout those Indians, get them set up. Then I'll come back for the company.
No. No, it's too slow. There isn't time.
Better let me try it, sir.
I said no, Captain.
You haven't got very far your way, Major.
You have your orders.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Captain.
Yes, sir.
I heard you and Sergeant Gorse were in a brawl earlier this evening in town.
Conduct unbecoming an officer.
You should learn to control your temper, Captain.
I wonder what family the Arapahoes are putting the knife to tonight, Major Daggett.
Should never start this sort of thing with you. Take your patrol.
Yes, sir. Any further orders?
May have Sergeant Gorse and Lieutenant Syberts. But no other officers or non-commissioned officers.
Right.
Bash your men through the main gates of the post half hour before reveille. Any questions?
No, sir.
Then move out.
Any questions, Lisa?
Definitely not.
Then move out.
I'm out. See ya.
Raymond Burr right there. Raymond Burr. Yeah, he on radio, he was the lead in this series, Fort Laramie. He did a ton of radio. He was he really never had his own radio show other than this. I mean, here was a guy who had an incredible voice.
Right.
He had incredible pipes on him, but he did a lot of work with Jack Webb. He appeared in Pat Novak for Hire, and he appeared on Dragnet, a lot of Dragnet episodes. I guess he was really good friends with Jack Webb. And Raymond Burr was in a lot of episodes of Escape and Suspense. And then he had this show, Fort Laramie. But then he hit it big in TV because he was Perry Mason on television for many, many years. And then later in life, he was Ironside. Remember?
I sure do.
So I guess he played really two lawyers. He was Perry Mason And then Ironside was, I don't remember like watching Ironside, but I think he was like a lawyer investigator, but he wasn't he in a wheelchair?
Mm-hmm.
Ironside?
Sure was.
Yeah. I don't remember really watching Ironside, but Raymond Burr was a terrific actor. You're hearing him here on Fort Laramie. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. And I want to remind all of our listeners that we give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter every single month. So how could you be eligible to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter? All we need you to do is send in a photograph of you and your kitty. Now, if you don't want to be in the photograph, that's fine. We need the kitty, though. That's important. We have to have the kitty cat in the picture. And we need the kitty's name and where the kitty lives, city and state. We'd like you to be in the picture, too, though. Right?
That's okay if you're picture shy. We just need the
no,
cat.
No, yeah. Sometimes they just send the kitty. That's fine. Send it to via email to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Catspridephoto@gmail.com. I know everybody loves winning things, and we thought, let's create something with our sponsor, Cat's Pride, where we can give our listeners something really fun each month. So there's a random drawing. We pick Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in here and we give him all of the pictures and he just randomly picks them out of a hat. I think it's literally a hat that Mike has. What is it? A box?
It's his bag for his headset.
Oh, okay, we put
it's
all
a
the
black
pictures.
Bag, but it's that's not important.
It's really not important, so
no,
I don't know why I'm spending any time
no
talking
idea.
About it. So
I think we
he picks out a name. And that's who we give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to.
Yeah, and that's a valuable prize if you have a cat.
It helps if
you don't have a cat,
it's
it may not,
so
not
good,
be
then.
Helpful for
it's
you.
It's not such a
right?
great prize, but it's a great prize if you have a cat.
Exactly.
So I know a lot of our listeners do because we get a lot of entries. So just send that in. Take a picture of your cat. Send it in to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. And you can do this every month because at the end of January, Dan will be here to do it, right?
Right.
And you could be a winner. That's right. You listening right now, you could win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Not bad, right?
Right. Whatever you say.
You're not very talkative now all of a sudden.
There's nothing to say.
Making me do all the heavy lifting.
There's nothing to say.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Are you looking for a luxury apartment complex in the northwest suburbs? Riverside Plaza, located in the heart of downtown Algonquin, may be exactly what you've been searching for. Exquisite design can be found throughout your luxury apartment, from the solid bamboo flooring to the porcelain tile bathrooms, modern kitchen, in-home washer dryers, and large veranda. You'll have full access to the club lounge with fireplace, game tables, billiards, and TV. Host a party in the event room, work out in the fitness center, and park in an indoor heated garage. Seeing is the only true way to appreciate Riverside Plaza, so call John now to set your appointment. Call 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343, or visit riverside.lux.com. That's LUXE.com.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari, and that woman with the wonderful voice there is Lisa Wolf, my co-host, and we're tuning in to Fort Laramie starring Raymond Burr. Let's tune in the conclusion now of Playing Indian, the very first episode in this series. Here's Fort Laramie.
There's a cabin just over this rise, Captain Quince.
Must be new, Mr. Syberts.
Yes, sir, it is. A man and his family, he's raising horses.
A man's a fool. There's just as good land a day's ride from the fort.
You're right, sir.
Am I, Mr. Syberts?
Of course, sir.
What if the man likes it out here, away from people? That make him a fool?
No, sir.
Then I'm wrong.
I'm afraid I don't understand, sir.
You agree too easily, Mr. Syberts. Better learn to think for yourself.
Yes, sir.
Now, where's your cabin?
Well, you'll see it in a minute, sir.
There it... No. Look, it's been burned.
Good. Sergeant!
So's the Arapahoes again, Captain.
Yes, Captain.
Look down there, Sergeant. File the patrol out as scouts, Sergeant. 1,000 yards between men. If there's any Indians around, I want to know it. The men will watch us at the cabin for arm signals.
Right, sir.
And then join Mr. Syberts and me down there. Move out.
Yes, sir.
Wilson. Follow me, Mr. Syberts.
They slaughtered every one of them.
Man. Woman. Young boy. This the whole family, Mr. Syberts?
That's all of them, sir.
Thank God for that.
One of them scalped. Even the boy.
At least they weren't tortured.
No, sir.
Tell me, Mr. Syberts, was the other family like this?
Why, yes, sir.
I see.
Made quite a mess, didn't he?
Take a good look, Sergeant. How many horses did this man have, Mr. Syberts?
About 10, as I remember, sir.
Well, Sergeant?
Funny thing.
What is?
Well, Captain, I don't know how them Arapahoes could have surprised him so fast.
What makes you think they did?
Not many arrows around. If the man had had a chance to put up any fight at all, there'd be a lot of arrows.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
You sure?
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Gorse, I excuse Mr. Syberts because of his lack of experience. But you're a disgrace to the cavalry. Ought to clean your sleeve and send you back to stable detail.
Yes, sir.
Don't stand there, Gab, and use your eyes.
I'm looking.
Look harder.
There ain't no tracks.
No tracks?
Somebody dragged him out with a blanket.
Somebody? Why do you say somebody, Sergeant?
I don't know, sir. There's something wrong here.
Look, how old's that boy, Sergeant?
Maybe 12, 13.
Old enough to be a brave in a couple of years if he was an Indian?
Yes, sir.
Don't Arapahoes usually keep a boy that age and try to make a warrior out of him?
They always do. Now, wait. Them tracks, they wouldn't hide their tracks.
No, they wouldn't.
Captain.
Yeah?
Now I know why you got so mad. I'm pretty mad myself.
Took you long enough. Mr. Syberts.
Yes, sir?
A man wearing moccasins doesn't care about his tracks. He's got nothing to hide. Wasn't the Arapahoes did this. Wasn't Indians at all. It was white men.
Whose place is this, Captain?
Oh, Jake Steele and his wife. Their daughter lives with them.
Shouldn't their daughter live with them, sir?
Ollie's 19, going on 20. She had some schooling back east.
You mean she should be married now?
This country needs women, Mr. Syberts, but it doesn't need single women.
Yes, sir.
Patrol! Mr. Syberts.
Yes, sir?
Dismount and unsaddle. Dry the horses. Turn them into the corral yonder. K Cache the saddles over in that brush so they can't be seen. All other equipment the men will keep.
Yes, sir.
Two men will stand by for escort duty. Move out.
Yes, sir.
Captain Quince, Miss Steele.
Well, Captain, what are you and your troopers doing out here?
I'll tell you if you ask me in.
Oh, well, come in.
Where's your family?
Well, they rode over to the Abbott place.
That's a long ride.
Well, they're spending the night. They'll be back tomorrow. Why? Is there trouble?
No, not for you, Holly.
Then what are you doing here?
I came to borrow your ranch.
What?
I need it for a few days, maybe a week.
Now, Captain,
You and your folks can stay with the Abbotts for a while. I'll send for you when I'm through here.
You seem to have it all figured out.
I have.
Of course. Shall I leave right now, Captain Quince?
Sooner the better. I'm sending an escort with you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
I can spare a couple of troopers.
Then you'll move in here.
Sergeant Gorse and me.
Wouldn't you like for me to stay and cook for you?
No. You couldn't do that.
Why? Don't you think I'm a good cook?
Maybe when this is over, I'll ride back sometime. And find out.
Captain Quince, just because you and I've met once or twice at Fort Laramie Dance...
Just a minute, Miss Holly. You don't understand.
Don't I?
I should have explained. There's going to be a fight here.
Fight?
I'm using this place for a trap, baiting it with a bunch of horses. And when the men I'm after come for them, well, we'll be waiting.
What men?
Men who've been stealing horses, murdering settler families, blaming it on the Arapahoes.
You mean it's white men who've been doing that?
I do.
Captain Quince, I'm beginning to understand that being in the cavalry, you're accustomed to ordering people around and not explaining anything.
I'm sorry, Holly. I upset you.
Now, if you'll wait outside while I get some things together, I'll ride up to the Abbotts with that escort you promised me.
Good.
Oh, Captain.
Yes?
I hope you have a chance someday to find out about my cooking. What I mean is, good luck.
Thank you, Holly.
Go on, get out of here now.
It took me that long to do something. I'd get busted to a private.
You can still get busted, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Seibertz.
Right here, Captain.
You'll take over the patrol, Mr. Seibertz. I want you to spot the men in a complete circle around this place, half mile out. They're to dig in. And when they think they're hidden, I'm going to ride that circle.
I understand, sir.
Heaven help any trooper I can see.
Yes, sir.
They're to let those men through. But when they hear gunfire from the cabin here, they're to kill anything that tries to get back out. Any questions?
No, sir.
Move out.
Yes, sir.
Well, Sergeant, you and I are going to be sitting on the pan of this trap.
Like poisoned meat, huh?
Maybe. Before we get off. You have to do that, Sergeant.
I didn't join the army to be locked up in this coop for 3 days.
Maybe you'd rather be sitting outside with the real men. half buried, afraid to move, with nothing but a canteen of water and a handful of jerky.
And no smokes?
And no smokes.
Captain Quince, I never had it so good, sir.
Then shut up. Doggone already?
Good. Ain't the kind of men who'd attack even a woman in the daylight.
No, I guess not. Gorse, you lied to me.
What?
No smokes. You tried to make me think you'd find it rough out there with the troopers because they can't smoke.
Well?
You never smoked in your life, you ape. Not with that quid of tobacco in your jaw day and night. What are you trying to give me?
You need action too, Captain. Bad as I do.
Yeah, I do.
3 days of this is worse than a winter in garrison. You go to St. Louis, I'm going with you. That easy money...
Shh, sounds... wait, wait. Come here.
What is it?
Horses. Listen.
We got him, Captain. We got him.
Okay. Move fast. Get out the back window. Come up the offside of the cabin. But don't shoot till I get at least one of them inside here.
Yes, sir.
Good hunting, Captain.
Same to you, Sergeant.
Come on, open up. We want to have a little talk with you.
Look out, Jim. He'll have a gun.
Listen, mister. We ain't gonna hurt nobody. We got something to tell you, is all.
Let's fix them and get out of here, Jim.
We're just passing by, mister. Got some news for you.
Maybe there ain't nobody home.
They wouldn't leave all them horses alone, would they? I'm coming in, mister. Don't shoot now. Have your daughter light the lamp, mister. Then we can talk.
Jim, what happened?
You're next, mister. You okay, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. Well, we got two of them anyway.
I didn't realize there were more than that.
He was holding their horses.
Well, the troopers will take care of him. They deserve a little action, too.
They sure do. Who are they, do you know?
Strangers.
One inside dead?
I didn't kill him.
But you took an awful chance, Captain.
It'll be worth it. Maybe we can find out what they did with all the horses they've stolen. Maybe we can take them back.
Yes, sir. But, well, there's... two families won't never get theirs. Hear that, Captain?
Mission accomplished.
No more women and kids dying hard. Feels kind of good, don't it, Captain? Don't it?
Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
Feels a whole lot better than making money in St. Louis.
Thank you.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by John Meston, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Dan Riss, and Joyce McCluskey, with Lawrence Dobkin, Clayton Post, Paul Duboff, and James Nusser.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Join us again next week for another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
There you have it. That is Fort Laramie, a good Western, the very first episode in the series, January 22nd, 1956. It's called Playing Indian, starring Raymond Burr, and also in the cast, Vic Perrin, Harry Bartell, Dan Riss, Lawrence Dobkin, Paul Duboff, and James Nusser, as heard on CBS. And we play all of these classic radio shows for you Saturday and Sunday nights. Lisa Wolf and I are here. We make the trek from the suburbs into the city here and come in with our classic radio shows under our arms. Right, Lisa?
That's true. We have to, like a suitcase, we have
right.
to.
Right, and our notebook for our notes, and we come in here. And
I carry everything. Carl just walks alongside and says, I'm sure you don't need any help, do you?
And Dan Long, the best in the business in there, our producer, puts these shows on the air, and we thank you, Dan. You're going to do a great job in there, buddy. I mean, he's juggling, like, I don't know how many balls in there.
He is the best.
What a great job
agree.
You do. I really appreciate you, Dan. You're terrific.
You are both terrific as well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. I mean, really and truly, I mean, there's a lot going on. He's got to watch all the commercials. I'm always asking him questions.
And
I'm
we count on you for a lot of things, and we take it for granted.
And how
sometimes.
Many times do you hear this? Which button do I push next? Hey, Dan, which button do I push here? Look at all of these buttons. There's a lot of buttons. And if you're watching us on television, you'll see there's a lot of buttons. Dan knows exactly which button to push.
Well, he goes well beyond the buttons. So.
Yeah. He plays all the interstitial music. He runs the commercials. He clicks the classic radio shows. There's a lot going on.
Way more than you and I can handle.
He can multitask.
That's
true. This is
true.
Something that I cannot do.
That is true.
He can multitask. You're pretty good at it, too, though.
Thanks, Carl.
I'm brutal at it. Next Saturday, we'll be back, Lisa. And we have Rocky Fortune starring Frank Sinatra. Then we have Jack Webb and Pete Kelly's Blues. And then the Screen Director's Playhouse starring Cary Grant. Then on Sunday, we'll be here at 11 o'clock as well with the Burns and Allen Show, Crime Classics, and Gunsmoke. But the man walked in himself, Nick DiGilio. Hey, Nick.
How
hey,
are
Nick.
You?
What's
hey, going Pete on, Kelly's buddy? Blues. I love Pete Kelly's
Pete
Blues.
Pete Kelly's Blues. There's only, I think, four or five episodes that ever survived of it.
Yeah.
And we have one next week because one of our listeners went to our Facebook page and said, I'd love to hear a Pete Kelly's Blues,
awesome.
Jack Webb.
Yeah.
And it's set in the 1920s in a speakeasy, and he's a cornet player, and he's always getting into trouble. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And there was a movie.
That's
Pete Kelly's Blues.
That's how I know it. I mean, I knew of the movie first.
Yeah.
And I love that movie.
Here's what happened. It was a radio show first, mm-hmm. and then they decided, you know what? Let's do a movie. And Jack Webb produced it, directed it, and starred in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. And then I found out about the radio stuff after I saw the movie.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so. I think there's some records even out, some mm-hmm. LPs of some of the music from that series. So we lost a big icon.
Yeah.
Big icon yeah. this morning. I think it happened about a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, the news broke about an hour ago.
Yeah, David Bowie died of cancer, and he was
69.
Battling cancer at a very young age, 69. He was battling it for about a year and a half, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit it because he just had an album come out.
Just released an album, and he just had a birthday.
Yeah.
Last week, he turned 69 and released an album. I think it was on his birthday on the
yeah.
same day.
Oh, man. So. Very, very sad.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Like after 4:30, we're going to do like a short tribute to, but we're doing a full on tribute to Bowie tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because we have more time. We want to do the proper thing. We found out about this
Yeah, late.
Late, and we've got Golden Globe stuff to cover
tonight.
The movie reviews with Eric and Jim Leskowski is going to join us. So we've got all that stuff coming up. Golden Globes. We'll talk about Bowie throughout the morning, of course.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, tune in. We've got some live music tomorrow morning. And then after 3 o'clock, we're going to do a full-on, like, two-hour tribute.
Did you ever interview him?
I've never interviewed him. I got to see him a few times live.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I never interviewed Bowie. But this is a massive loss.
Did you see the wonderful exhibit that was here in the summer?
Yes.
I went and saw that myself. Yeah.
He was amazing. It's really sad.
It's unbelievable how talented.
He was incredible. And not just in the world of music, but in acting. Right. And,
Guy was just incredible.
Absolutely.
We lost a big, big talent.
Yep.
Yep. David Bowie has passed away at age 69. Very, very sad.